Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com. The score!
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We enjoy talking football every week with Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Dan is off today. It's the Bernstein and Holmes show with Lawrence and Layla. And we get the opportunity to talk with the man himself, Mike Florio. He joins us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Okay, Mike, there's a lot that's going on in the world of the NFL. I'm kind of scared to start down the road of the Tom Brady stuff, but it is now like out there. So what are your thoughts on how we should go about covering Tom Brady and his personal life and where that intersects with his professional life?
It is fascinating to me that the New York Post, owned by the Murdoch family, which owns Fox Sports, which will employ Tom Brady and pay him $37.5 million per year eventually, is in the middle of all of this, but they started reporting a few weeks ago on marital discord, and then the Post reported yesterday that Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen have hired divorce lawyers. And Tom Brady was asked about it a couple of weeks ago. He's got no issue with his personal life being part of this. He lives a very public life. How do you draw the line between public and private when you have crossed over from athlete into full-blown reality show-style celebrity? Your spouse has that same cachet. There are too many people, especially in the NFL, players who want the attention on their own terms. And the way I always phrase it is, hey, everybody, look at me. What the hell are you looking at? You can't have both of those. And Tom Brady lives a hey, everybody, look at me existence. He's active on social media. He's selling underwear and crypto. This is a significant issue of concern publicly, and as it relates to how he's going to perform as a football player and how the team performs. People are making legal bets coast to coast now. I know there are plenty of states that don't have it yet, but most do. And the guy was gone for 11 days in training camp, presumably because of these issues. And he's also operating beyond an age at which anyone has ever operated except to be a kicker. We don't know how this affects him. We don't know how it affects the team. There's no playbook. There's no manual. There's no anything. So I think you put all those things in a vat. And it's a case-by-case type of a thing. You know, backup right tackle for the Lions. His personal life has no relevance or significance to anyone. But for somebody like Tom Brady, wherever the line is, he's clearly on the side of it where it's fair game.
I think that that's an appropriate way to discuss it. He's also married to somebody who had a higher net worth coming into that marriage than he did at the time. So she's done okay for herself as well. But to me, the bigger issue still comes back to what you talk about every single time we bring up Brady. And that is, a man got wronged and had to arguably napalm his career in order for something really obvious to be discussed. And it's in the NFL's best interest not to. And what happened with the secret plan with the Dolphins and Sean Payton? And what happened after that with Brian Flores. And I'm going to still talk about it because it seems like nobody else is. And these things deserve to be discussed in this space when it comes to all of these decisions that were made. Because to me, he was probably operating under a much different game plan. Therefore, she was as well until this all got taken to light.
There has been no reporting on this, but the timeline backs up the notion that if this were ever to be proven to be the case, that maybe he wasn't as forthcoming within the walls of his own home about his intent to try to play for the Dolphins as he should have been. And maybe there was a belief that he was truly retired and there was no effort to come back and there was no attempt to finagle a return and a trip to Florida to partner with, or South Florida, he was already in Florida, but South Florida to partner with Sean Payton. And when you look at the timeline, the NFL exposed what the Dolphins were trying to do by getting both Tom Brady and Sean Payton on August 2nd. It was the next day, his birthday, that he started missing practices, and it was the next week that he was gone for 11 days. So, again, I don't know. I haven't seen any reporting. I'm not doing any reporting. But it wouldn't surprise me if that hitting the fan about Miami didn't end up causing something else to hit the fan, and here we are 2 months later.
Mike, I think it's really interesting that Mike McDaniel already had said that Tua is not going to play on Sunday, and he said that on Monday. We had a conversation with Patrick Manley, who played for the Bears for 16 years, and he was saying, and I remember this because I was covering the Bears in the NFL at the time, that there, when he was finishing his career, there it seemed to be a change in the way that people looked at head trauma in the NFL in a positive way, and that over that stretch of time where he's been retired, it's reverted backwards. How big a deal was what happened last week into maybe course correcting how players, ex-players, coaches feel about head trauma in the game?
Well, I think we are going to see a pushback the other direction. When the NFL had its concussion epiphany 13 years ago this month because a congressional committee called Roger Goodell and Demoris Smith to come answer tough questions about return to play, about sensitivity to CTE, things that medical science had discovered that the NFL had yet to fully embrace, the NFL's reaction to it was to put in place very stringent return to play guidelines. And for a while there, 3-4 years, maybe a little longer, it felt like there was a presumption that if a guy had a concussion, he wasn't going to play the following week. And then that flipped the other way. And more guys were getting cleared by the following weekend to play after suffering a concussion. And I remember early on, coaches would say nothing about a guy's status. And I'm sure there's a rule somewhere on the books that they're not supposed to talk about in any way, shape, or form a guy who is concussed and when he may be back and will he be back. But the idea that they already have ruled Tua out for this week, when in theory he could pass this protocol, that protocol, and be fine by Sunday, it tells you that there is some internal pressure on the Dolphins, on the league, on everyone to make sure that they don't put Tua in a situation where he plays right away and maybe has another concussion. And that's the other side of this, too, that doesn't get discussed much. There is an obligation on the part of the player to protect himself, especially when you're not 6'5", like most of these quarterbacks are. You got to get rid of the ball. Drew Brees got rid of the ball. We never saw Drew Brees get ragdolled the way that Tua did. You've got to be more careful. He's got to learn to be more careful because the physics are not in his favor. And if he wants to continue to play in the NFL, he's got to be like some of these other shorter quarterbacks, i.e. normal-sized humans playing quarterback, who avoid taking the kind of hits where the physics just are not going to keep him healthy over the long haul.
But what is compelling to me about this situation is that because of how viral the images went from Tua getting hit the Sunday before, and we talked about it in this very segment last week, and how it was ruled a back injury, the eye test won in this case. People knew when they saw what they saw that that was scary, that that was something where you say, even if it's the next Sunday, this is a person who likely shouldn't be playing. It's Thursday. How many times have we heard players, Richard Sherman included, talk about not anymore. But previously, talk about the dangerous nature of only having 4 days in between games and what that could do to somebody. And then also talking to players like Teddy Johnson, who talk about how the worst part that they were told of increasing their head trauma was that they were injured again in a short amount of time after the first one.
Second concussion
and
syndrome.
And you see that all come together in this space.
Oh, absolutely. And look, that investigation that the NFL and the NFLPA are conducting is supposed to come to a conclusion soon. They promised transparency, but you know, the NFLPA's position is very simple, and it's easy to get caught up in this question of was it a back, was it a head injury. The NFLPA looks at it and says, does it really matter? Either one causing that kind of wobbliness where he's almost falling down and then a teammate has to hold him up, either one should have been enough for him to be done for the day. And they want to get away, the union does, from this checklist approach. What does it take to get back on the field? What does it take to get back on the field? Check this box, check this box, check this box, back on the field, and treat these football players as patients, not as guys who are anxious to get back on the field. Because, look, the vast majority of players want to get back and play. They don't want to get wally-pipped. There are only a few who have the luxury of tapping out and saying, I'm having concussion symptoms, and can miss a game, miss a week, miss a month, and still have their job. Most guys have to keep playing for fear of not having a job when they're able to play again. So the process needs to take all that into account. It needs to be transparent, and it needs to err on the side of protecting the players, because the players aren't inclined to protect themselves.
Mike, I'm interested in one particular noon kickoff this weekend, and it's not the Bears-Vikings. It's the Patriots-Lions. And the reason that I'm interested is, one, I feel like we're starting to get to critical mass with the Lions and their experiment with Dan Campbell, where if you don't start seeing results, how long can you allow it to go on without there being some repercussions? And the other part is, I personally, and this is coming from someone who has a degree from the University of Alabama, I think Bailey Zappe actually has more upside than Mac Jones. And I thought it was interesting this week hearing how the television crew had spent so much time with Belichick last week, and he was talking about Zappe in a way that made them think that he's beyond just a flyer of a draft pick for Belichick. But the Patriots are still 1-3. They've got a lot of work to do. So when you look at this matchup, what do you see?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not ready to say the Lions are at a kind of a crossroads with Dan Campbell, because I'd like to think that Chris Spielman's influence on ownership will be, among other things, to get ownership to be more patient and to give coaches more time. It's hard to ever really let anything take root and grow if you're ripping out whatever is there and replacing it with somebody who has a completely different style. And look at how they went from Jim Caldwell to the exact opposite in Matt Patricia, to the exact opposite in a different direction in Dan Campbell. And you have to let a culture really, really percolate and give it some time. So we'll see. They're scoring a lot of points, but they're giving up a lot of points too, and they're 1-3. For the Patriots, if Zappe is the better guy, now's the time to find out. Now's the time to let him play. What a difference it would have been if they could have stolen that game at Lambeau Field. And they had the ball at the 49, at their own 49 in overtime, and all they needed was a field goal to win. They had a chance.
And they took the ball out of his hands, which surprised me a little bit.
And that really would have and could have advanced this legend a little bit. And do they have like an early Tom Brady going on? But it's a different dynamic too, because they just drafted Mac Jones last year in the first round. This wasn't somebody Bill Belichick inherited, or some guy who's on a big money contract that maybe isn't living up to it like Drew Bledsoe was. So it's a weird time for the Patriots in a variety of respects. And then the one thing you didn't mention, you do have the Matt Patricia angle here, where he's calling the plays now for the Patriots, and he's the guy that those Lions players could not wait to see out of the building.
I want to ask you a question, too, about the national impression of the Bears. And I understand that playing the Texans and the Giants are not exactly appointment television for everybody outside of their respective markets. But has the opinion, or your opinion, maybe changed at all in Justin Fields, or has it been refined based on what you're seeing in the last couple of games?
I think that it is something that is still a work in progress. It's amazing the team is 2-2. And this is a chicken and the egg thing that I struggle with all the time. You get a first round quarterback who gets brought into a situation where there is dysfunction. There isn't a lot of help around him. What's been done in one off season to put help around him? Look at all the other young quarterbacks where they've gone out and they've tried to beef up the team, whether it's the Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence, whether it's Eagles with Jalen Hurts, the Dolphins with Tua Tagovailoa, the things they've done to beef up the talent around the quarterback, and Justin Fields is just kind of there, like, it's just me. So I don't know that you can even begin to properly evaluate him. I know he's been struggling, but the team is 2-2. They have an opportunity to go into Minnesota and maybe steal one. The Vikings are a a very false 3-1. They could easily be 1-3. This is a game the Bears could win, but it's just hard to really get a feel for this team. They feel worse than 2-2, but hey, these wins in September are money in the bank. So you try to get better, you try to improve, and you hope that you can get the most out of Justin Fields. And you realize that it's a regime that didn't draft him. There's no guarantee that they would have drafted him if they could have drafted him. And it's just a shame because for these quarterbacks in round one, that first stop in their NFL career makes or breaks them. You rarely see a guy who was a first-round pick wash out and resurface somewhere else and be highly successful.
Mike, I'm fascinated with the Colts. And the reason that I'm fascinated is because you look at their choices at quarterback. And Chris Ballard, you know, I actually covered Chris Ballard when he was here. I think he's a really smart guy. But I don't understand that in the time that you went from Phillip Rivers to Carson Wentz to now Matt Ryan, there hasn't been a quarterback in development in Indianapolis. I find that to be a weird way to go about trying to fix your quarterback problem, that you're not doing it on two different fronts.
Well, and the problem is they haven't been so bad that they've been in a position to go all in for a young quarterback. So, you know, you go from Andrew Luck to Jacoby Brissett, and we're not that bad. And then you go from Brissett to Phillip Rivers, and they gave the Bills everything they could handle in the playoffs the year that Rivers was the starting quarterback. And then you go to Carson Wentz, and that was a disaster. And now it's Matt Ryan. And I talked to Chris Ballard about this after the draft. They want to get to the point where they've got a 10- to 15-year guy. But the problem is, you got an owner who's very impatient, and he wants to win. So the choice between guy who we know can play, except for Carson Wentz, versus guy who is a completely raw project, if you can get the guy that we know can play, that seems like the safer course. But it's not working this year because they may have gotten Matt Ryan a little bit too late. So at some point, they're just going to have to let it all bottom out and go out and take someone with a top five pick. The problem is, if it ever gets to that point, it's going to be a different head coach and a different GM likely making that top five pick into a franchise quarterback, and they hope that they can continue that chain that was broken after Andrew Luck retired.
When you're talking about quarterbacks maybe drafted high, and we mentioned the Bears, and well, they don't always succeed in other places. Are you referring to Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett there, or was that just my own estimation?
No. I mean, that's another example of it. I mean, look, you develop a reputation around the NFL based upon what you do early in your career. And teams don't have the luxury of just, saying, well, we're going to give it 3 years for this guy to unlearn the things that he learned that he shouldn't have learned and to get him to where we want to be, and we're going to mold this lump of clay. Everybody is accountable for their jobs with their jobs, and think back over the years. Vinny Testaverde is really the only guy who was a bust with the Buccaneers and who ended up being a pretty good quarterback anywhere else. It's rare that you see that guy who's first-round quarterback bust who ever does anything anywhere else. And I think a lot of factors go into it. It may just be the guy was never very good. That may be part of it. I mean, look at Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, both clustered in Carolina now. And Darnold's hurt, but Baker Mayfield is not doing very much, if anything, in his second stop. And, yeah, Trubisky already benched, and in comes Kenny Pickett. And now Pickett's got to get it done, because if they have a horrible year and they have a top five pick, they're going to have a decision to make. Do we go for a clear franchise guy, or do we keep trying to build this thing with Kenny Pickett?
Mike, as always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great talking to you. Have a great week.
Thanks,
that's Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. I always like talking the league with him. It's good. And I feel like we're probably, as a show, going to have to start doing more NFL than Bears. Not yet, but soon. We're going to have to do that because this thing's... We haven't even gotten to your notebook on the Bears yet.
We have not.
But you'll have to save that for a little while.
It is a four-hour show.
It is a four-hour show. We're going to be here until 2 o'clock. And if you're just joining us, thank you. We appreciate it. Dan is off today. He will be back tomorrow. Layla, as per usual, is here on Wednesday. So it makes things pretty easy for me as the partner on this show. I want to talk about the Cubs and the White Sox. Because... yesterday we had a conversation with a Cub about a potential White Sox manager. And then it got followed up with something that a current Cub said about that potential White Sox manager. We are going to do that and discuss it with you next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
We, like the fans, felt the level of disappointment with the performance this year. It's been described to me at times as depressing, disgust, frustration, shock, and I think any of those adjectives are appropriate. And we realize that we have to, despite our expectations, despite what we accomplished over the last couple of years, despite how the world viewed this team entering the 2021 season, we need to earn that respect back from the fans and earn their support over the coming months and into next season.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talking about the next part of this process with the White Sox is they look for a manager.
This is idols.
Yeah.
My favorite thing from Lollapalooza.
Really?
Yeah. They're pretty great. They have an album called Joy is an Act of Resistance.
You enjoy concert going.
Yes.
I've reached the point where I don't, but I love seeing your pictures because it seems like you're having so much fun. I also think that you tend to do concerts correctly. Like I'm not seeing you, like, you're not in a mosh pit. Like you're
Oh, I kind of was for part of Kygo.
Yeah?
Yeah, but not really. Not like that. Like I jumped around.
I feel like your way of doing concerts would be more in tune with what I would do if I went to concerts.
Yeah, spend the money where you need to, but no one GA is going to get you from point A to B.
This is why Layla Rahimi rocks. She is here with me. Dan's off today, so it's the Bernstein Home Show. Lawrence and Layla hanging out here with you until 2 o'clock. Layla, how do you feel about the concept of the White Sox having to go away from White Sox DNA to find their next manager? Because I find myself kind of on the fence on that.
Why are you on the fence is my question.
Because I think that there are good candidates that actually have White Sox DNA.
There's one that I think that we know he has White Sox DNA, but it might not be as obvious to everyone.
Right.
I don't think that individual counts in this discussion.
Okay. I mean the White Sox way getting in the way of them hiring. I'm glad they're going to give Miguel Cairo an interview. I think that is something that can help his career hopefully down the line, or maybe he impresses them and he ends up managing the team.
But when people tell me like Ron Karkovice,
like no, or like I understand it, like if I hear like I don't want Chris Getz's name in this conversation, like that doesn't make any sense to me at all. But there's no reason why you shouldn't interview Ozzie.
No.
There's no reason to not do it. Another name that's come up in circles has been Willie Harris, who's been the third base coach for the Cubs. So check this out. Yesterday we had David Ross on, and it was part of my agenda for questions with Rossi yesterday to talk to him about Willie Harris, because that's the manager whom he works under right now. So we asked Rossi what he thinks about Willie Harris as a managerial candidate. White Sox fans, take a listen.
I mean, the guy's a hard worker. He's a connector. He's a guy that is really, when you see him interact with the players, there's collateral there that he's built up in a friendship and a mentor role, and he's got their back. He cares for them outside of just their performance as individuals. And when you have that, you can cash in on that to get extra work or have conversations or push him to be a little bit better. I think like Willie's got all those qualities, and as much as you don't want to lose guys on your coaching staff that really impact players and make you better, I think everybody's goal is continue to move up, climb up, and be at the top of whatever they're passionate about and want to do. So I know that's something that he would love to do. I know that's something he's working towards, growing every single day. And you know, if that happens, great. We're here to support him. We'll help. You know, I can help in any way. I've got Andy Green, who's been a manager and been in a lot of interviews. We'll help out in any way, but we'd also hate to lose him in the same breath. So he's a special, special man, and we want what's best for those people that give you their all every single day.
He's an energetic guy. It comes across when you see him out there on the field. Can he still be that guy while managing a team? And what were some of the things that you learned about, like, the grind of managing 162 that could be helpful?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the same stuff he possesses. I think, like, him being able to have people skills, that's where it starts. It's about investing in people. You know, there's that saying, you know, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care, right? Like, that's Willie to a T. He's gonna get on your side and become your friend and be passionate about you as a human being first. I think the difference in managing is there's a little less time to interact with players consistently, and you have to find your moments to try to impact them, get to know them, hang out with them. And also, you know, the words when you do have to give them hard truths, it's the seat and the title comes with a little more weight. And so you got to choose your words carefully. And, you know, that's a delicate balance. I learn that on a daily basis. I'm still learning a lot. I have no hesitation about Willie Harris learning how to navigate the human being and the human element side of things that come with managing. And then a lot of it is just experience. Like, look, he's got to do some things in the minor leagues and that I didn't get to do. So he's further along in that aspect. And I grow on a daily basis. I think if you would talk to any manager that's done it for as long as Tony La Russa has, or Bruce Bochy, or Joe Maddon, they'll probably tell you there's a lot of things that are new to each individual game that come at you that are learning moments or things that you can pull from your past. I think that's just part of managing, is the more experience you get, the better you're going to be over the long haul and continue to try to grow and get better. So I think that would go for everybody. But, you know, we're excited for Willie if he gets that opportunity. And I have no hesitation that Willie can adjust fast and relate to players.
I think there's something we're also needing to say in this conversation. Willie Harris interviewed the last time this job was open.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that a lot of people knew that.
He interviewed for it, and now I think that he's got two more years of experience at the major league level, along with what Rossi was talking about, his minor league experience, which does put him, because it shows you the divergent paths that managers can take to the job. By the way, I think David Ross is a really good manager.
I don't think we talk enough about the managerial trees and their respective successes in Major League Baseball. That Joe Maddon tree is pretty strong.
Yep.
When you consider Bud Black, and I've said this before, Dave Roberts, a part of that Bud Black staff, how he's obviously risen up the ranks. A.J. Hinch, by the way, was an assistant general manager on that Padres team. That's just one part of that Joe Maddon tree.
Oh, but the another name that was mentioned, I think should be in the pile of people that the White Sox think about, and that's Andy Green. That's another name where I think that That's a guy whose brain you want to pick. And I think might have a chance to be a good manager if that's what he wants to do. But with Willie Harris, there's the White Sox DNA, but not necessarily. Like there's enough of work outside of the White Sox that maybe it doesn't count the way that it looks on paper.
He's qualified.
He is qualified. Marcus Stroman tweeted this, and it's interesting. He quote tweeted a White Sox talk video of Rick Hahn talking about the failures of the White Sox. And in that quote tweet, he said, Willie Harris needs that manager job next year. Absolute legend who's well-respected in the game. Perfect man for the position. So that's an endorsement from David Ross, and that's an endorsement from Marcus Stroman on Willie Harris.
And we've talked to Ian Happ about Willie and the joy that he has whenever he's just in the space of the game. It's infectious. And how much people enjoy working with him.
The idea of him being able to relate, that his career is still close enough that he can relate to players, and there seems to be a joy with which he goes about doing his work. Now, that goes into a little bit of contrast to what Liam Hendricks said on Monday about what the White Sox need, that the White Sox need an authoritarian, which I thought was a really interesting choice of words by Liam.
It just made me wonder who he was calling out. Is that fair to ask? Because when he said that, I'm like, man, he's talking about somebody, and I want to know who. And you're not going to get that answer. That's just not how this job works. And you can ask all you want, but it's just, you know how it is. People are not going to say that to you. But that's where I was at with that.
Yeah, it was interesting. And had it been an actual like year-end media session, then one could have asked Rick Hahn about those things and maybe gotten a response.
Interesting you say that on this particular holiday.
I mean, you just, the season,
accountability and whatnot.
How about it? The season ends today. You could have done it tomorrow and then things would have been, but there's going to be a lot of names floated around.
What if we just call his alter ego Rick Hahn?
Rick Hahn?
Rick Hahn is still trading for more bullpen.
You're going to get a tweet
for
that.
He's gotten like three relievers since we started the show.
Well, his relievers and their salaries for next year are problematic for building the next great White Sox team. But
traded a starter for Cesar Hernandez.
I mean, they owe Joe Kelly $8 million next year. They owe Jake Diekman $4 million next year.
Yeah, when you add it up, some of those salaries combined to what the Phillies are paying Kyle Schwarber, who is second in home runs to who?
When you add up the war of the people that Rick Hahn brought in this year, not great until we get to Elvis Andrus. If you look at the money spent,
it was a waiver claim.
Correct. It's not good. Don't worry. We're going to kind of stop talking about the White Sox.
I didn't even talk about how watching the Bears game was like watching the entire White Sox season unfold in front of me. I can do that later.
We do still need to get inside of your notebook for Bears stuff because we haven't done that.
I actually did notes app this time.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was a weird change of pace.
But you did actually bring the notebook here.
I always bring my notebook. It's got a lot of notes in it. And sometimes you want to look up stuff. Like, let's flip to a random page right now. Oh, God, it's the same one. I can't read it. Fetty Felstart. Good God. Okay, let's turn the page.
It's not a Jermaine of Fetty. What else you got?
All right, this is going. Holy crap. Eddie Jackson and Quinn. They did something good, I think.
Hey, Eddie Jackson with his third interception of the season. That's why we ended up eating BoJack cereal earlier this week.
Roquan pick six. There's some T. Higgins notes in here.
And Dan did eat the whole bowl.
Of course, it's not going to convert.
Toss crack.
How did he feel about that?
He enjoyed it more than I expected.
But later on, how did he feel?
He took his pills and he said that he was fine.
It's not the cereal we were concerned about with Dan for the rest.
It was the whole milk.
It was the lactose. Why whole milk?
He loves it.
And for those of you who do that thing, why? If I'm feeling like luxurious, like I am playing with the most house of house money, I will occasionally get a 2% latte. And I'm like, well, I mean, this is...
Aren't you the belle of the ball?
I'm like, this is a very satisfying latte. I don't know how I can really top this in my daily life. And that's why I can only do it so often. Because, man, that's an indulgence. But whole milk? I want to know from you people. You whole milk people. I want to hear from you. That's it's not even that. It's just the feeling of the drinking of the sludge.
The chewing of the milk. Because that's what you're doing with whole milk.
Yeah, it's not. I don't like. Listen, everybody has different, you know, internal systems. But it's yeah. I know that fat is flavor 563. All right, but that's a lot.
Well,
like,
just keep reading that during the break because we have to break because your High Noon segment because we are turning all of High Noon over to you.
Speaking of fat is flavor 563, we're just going to go to the extreme of that conversation. And additionally, if any of you were up this morning on Twitter and saw the same story trending that I did, holy crap.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
High Noon, we do it every day around this time, and we usually catch you up on the things that we've been discussing so far. We started the show talking about Layla being over at White Sox on Monday and kind of letting her take us through her view of how she saw things. Then we talked about Jose Abreu and Johnny Cueto and Elvis Andrews, three of the smartest players that the White Sox have, and it's possible that none of them are going to be White Sox going forward, and that made us sad.
Real sad.
We talked with Adam Hogue about the White Sox and the Bears. We talked with Mike Florio, and we just had a rousing discussion about Willie Harris as a possible candidate to be White Sox manager.
It's High Noon.
Layla, I turn the High Noon floor over to you.
All right, everybody who's pro whole milk, wow. That's just, but you know what? I'm going to give you more fat because apparently the new cheese board, according to CNN and our fave Jeannie Mose, is butter board.
It's a dish for those who like to butter up their guests.
Soften your butter.
While riding the crest of a culinary trend.
Have you heard of a butter board? Have you heard of a butter board?
Literally boards slathered with butter and who knows what sprinkled in.
I have tons of flaky salt, tons of lemon zest, a little bit of red pepper flakes, fresh figs, strawberries, and add in some roasted garlic. I drizzle just a little bit of honey over that chili oil.
Then everyone is supposed to dig in with their bread. The sharing part freaked out this skeptic. Looks like a board of germs and dust and a hair falling in it. But food influencer at Justine Snacks begs to differ.
I love it.
Her video whetted appetites, though she credits Joshua McFadden, who included the butter board in his 2017 book. Now it belongs to everybody.
Y'all, this is to die for.
Or die from. One critic called it a disgusting pile of coronary. When this TikToker didn't exactly devour it, someone asked, why are you chewing it like it's a piece of gum? Some are already moving on to the cream cheese board, topped with lox and capers, mopped up with a bagel. Already the butter board is starting to feel like an overloaded pizza with chunks of cured salami.
Apricot jam.
I happen to have these dried edible flowers.
Why just butter your bread when your bread can be butter boarded?
You guys, this is perfect served with a warm, crusty bread.
A warm, crusty bed is one garnish too many. Jeannie Mose, CNN.
What are we doing here?
One critic called it a disgusting pile of coronary.
So many things can be described there. Could be talking about a lot of things.
That's so great. Also, I had not seen that.
I saw and I was like, okay. And then my other issue with this is the cream cheese board that she talks about is on the menu everywhere. It's a lox plate.
Correct.
I have this new thing. It's called a cream cheese board. It's totally not the thing you saw on the menu a while back.
I don't mind
that board.
I don't mind the butter board as long as people don't double dip.
But they're gonna. There's videos out here in these streets talking about people who knowingly will go to the restroom and then fake wash their hands. Just wash your hands. It takes 2 seconds more. You'll thank everyone later.
Yeah, I like to control my own butter intake, though.
Yeah, most people try to, but
I gotta
restaurants,
tell you,
you know, a lot of the secret is just more butter and such.
I agree, and that is one of the best things about going to like a fancy like steakhouse, because usually you get some warm whipped butter.
Oh yeah,
with fantastic bread
or Texas Roadhouse honey butter.
I mean, I'm not gonna turn that down.
I'm not here to hate on chain restaurants.
I'm not either. And?
So the other story that I found that's also pretty conceptually amazing. Okay, here's how I Googled this, just so you know. The Guardian, seed experts, crocodiles, South Africa.
Okay.
The headline, TV garden experts killed and fed to hungry crocodiles in rare seed dispute. Random word generator. But this is actually a story. An elderly couple seeking South African brushland for rare seeds to sell online was kidnapped, robbed, and murdered and fed to crocodiles in 2018. A court in South Africa was told on Tuesday. That's a long time to wait for your court date. But it's apparently these two South African flower experts.
Okay.
Search for rare bulbs, you know, bulb flowers. Those are going to be popular pretty soon because seasons. And I guess somebody knew that they were these experts and they killed them in what I can see is an attempted robbery of their Land Cruiser and camping equipment.
Yikes.
Two people were charged with the couple's kidnapping and murder, faced life in prison if found guilty. It was established on February 13th. The defendants were drawing money from various ATMs, which amounted to the theft of $42,000, and the robbery of their car and camping equipment, and that they did unlawfully and intentionally kill Rachel Saunders between the same dates and Rodney Sanders as well. So that was the alleged statement in the court. But
okay.
They were trying to search South African grassland, and in a robbery, I guess, to hide the bodies, their bodies were fed to crocodiles.
Sounds like an episode of Bones that I just saw yesterday where someone was fed to a tiger. That tiger didn't go crazy. The tiger went tiger.
And apparently these people told the crew they were off to harvest rare seeds to help replenish the inventory of the Silver Hill Seed Shop they ran as an online store from Cape Town.
Which is important.
But also, you can't transport that stuff very far, right? Because they could be invasive species and such.
Right. And it may not grow the same. But I mean, I'm guessing that they would know, though, right? That they're the de facto experts on the subject.
Right. They were seeking out rare gladioli flower seeds in the Drakensberg Mountain area.
Oh, that's too, I don't like the idea of them being fed to crocodiles. I feel like that's a little bit of a downer.
In my time as a news reporter, I found out that oftentimes the worst part of the crime is not the initial crime. It is the attempt at the cover-up.
It is always the case. We need to take a break. When we come back, Tim Jenkins is going to break down tape for us on Justin Fields. We'll find out if he actually did play better, and Layla's going to whiteboard some terms for people. We will do that next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.